Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They have this Panther sound effect that is just the cheesiest, stupidest sounding thing. Big voice guy going, Panther goal scored by Sam Reinhart.
Where'd you get that thing?
I trapped it. Been keeping it in my bathroom at the motel, feeding it old pizza.
It's Mike Shope.
If you're calm, that wondrous big cat will be calm too. But if you're scared, that beautiful death machine will do what God made it to do, namely, eat you with a smile on its face.
And the Bulldog. On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
You know, just let me get through this. Probably not really a concern because they've won the last two Stanley Cups. But I think kind of a smart, sneaky move for Florida is to schedule a team for the opener that wears the same color. Because then you look around the crowd and like everybody's just red. Like, wow, this has really taken hold. Unlike, say, the Chargers on Sunday when they're playing Washington.
Right.
And it looks like just the red team is the home team.
A sea of maroon everywhere.
Sea of maroon. Burgundy, if you will. It's been a long time since we've chatted with Travis Yost. I'm excited to do it. I know Bulldog is too. Travis of TSN with us now on the West Her Hotline. Travis, how's life?
Life's good. I thought they scheduled the Blackhawks because the Blackhawks are awful, but it might be the colors. That could also work as well.
Win-win. Literally, maybe. Chicago still, I mean, just on the ice at least, Travis, if not also off. Still down bad this year?
Down very bad. They've got the flashy talent you're looking for now in a rebuild, especially down the middle. You got Bedard and Nazar. It's a good 1-2 punch in the top six. So there's... If you're a Hawks fan, there's at least reason, like high-end young skill to watch that team. But, yeah, you will not be seeing a game 83 in Chicago.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how the goalie does. Spencer Knight was a very highly touted prospect coming out of BC and kind of got derailed while he was in Florida. But fresh start, and, I mean, there's a lot of talent there, so, you know, maybe that can work for them.
Too. Revenge game.
Right, revenge game.
Spencer Knight revenge game. Well, Travis, here we are again. What about the Sabres? So Bulldog mentioned earlier in the show when I brought up your name that we go back a long time with you. And he's like, that was the 16 draft when we sat with Travis outside the arena when Austin Matthews was literally drafted in the NHL. So it's at least 10 years, I guess, since we've been talking. And I'm not sure we've ever had a different question for you about the Sabres. It's just like...
When will it end?
Right?
It is a funny way to think about it, right? And I'm pretty sure the first question was, well, where's the weakness? And I'm like, I don't know about the goaltending. And 10 years forward, boy, I don't know about the goaltending in Buffalo. It's like maybe we're pushing to see if we can eclipse the 17-year Bills drought. And we're a year – I mean, this is getting long, long, long in the tooth. And once again – you look up and down this lineup, and you see plenty of skill, and there's pockets of strength, especially on the blue line. But I don't know how you can be, let's say, sharply confident in this roster with their goaltending situation right now. It is dire.
Yeah, and even, you know, how much would you feel different at all, if at all, if Luukkonen were healthy? Because he was not good last year, really. He was good the second half of the previous season, which earned him the contract extension. They've got some bad luck with him being hurt to start here and then being, you know, re-injured once he finally gets in a preseason game last week. Would you feel differently at all about their situation if he were healthy going into the year?
Not really. And that's going to sound overly critical of Lukanen, but I mean, it's exactly what we saw last year, which was, let's just be honest, replacement level goaltending, not a far cry from what he was two seasons ago.
Right.
And the other element here, he's just an unknown, right? So it's like, okay, we may have a replacement level goaltender and a high end AHL, low end NHL goalie here. And maybe there's more of a ceiling, in this player when he's back and healthy and playing on a regular basis for this team. But, you know, I wrote about it in the summer when he was healthy, and one of the – every summer in August when literally anyone important is, you know, taking vacation time from TSN and every other outlet, that's when I'm like, hey, look, this is my opportunity to steal the news right here. So I'll do a Talenteers grade every single team's depth chart, wingers, centers, blue line goalies – every single team in the league. And for me, it's a good kind of prep. It's good prep work for the approaching seasons. I try and watch every team as much as I can. And one of the interesting debates that I thought was I graded the Sabres having one of the best blue lines in the league. I mean, I think I had them somewhere in like the 4-7 territory. Mm-hmm. And I really do mean that. I think the defense is good from a three pairing standpoint when healthy, when Power's back, of course. I think they are as good as a blue line that you can find, especially from a non-Stanley Cup contender, let's say. I think they'd be at the very top, along with Ottawa, maybe a couple others. But juxtaposed against just completely unreliable goaltending, and we can even set aside the injury piece, which, by the way, availability is a skill, right? You hear about that in many other forums, right? Is the defense good enough to offset what is likely to be substandard goaltending? And maybe another way to ask that question is, can Buffalo get goaltending that is just something reasonably close to average? Because if that's the case, with other tailwinds, like a very, very sharp weakening in talent around them in the division, there is opportunity for the Sabres to compete. I mean, they do have talent, right? Like, it's not like you're squinting at this roster and saying, I'm looking at the San Jose Sharks at this point, like, you know, deep early phase of a rebuild. But, you know, if you're a Sabres fan, you're sick of hearing it, right? Like, at the end of the day, it's like, I want results on ice. And some would say that's why Lindy Ruff might be back in town. It's like, that's the last memory we have of a successful hockey team here. But I think, at least from a Sabres outlook, you know, as bullish as I am on the blue line, I think it's very hard. It's kind of like the soccer analogy, the perfect shot will beat the perfect goalie. I don't think a great blue line can offset really bad goaltending, so they really need, when Lukanen, when he's back especially, they really need a bounce-back season from him in the worst way. Probably the most important player that'll define the season for them.
Speaking of how we've been talking for a long time, is anything different, better, more trustworthy when it comes to analyzing goalies? Like, I look at Alex Lyon, he's never had like a full-time job. I don't much necessarily care what kind of a prospect he was, in that it's 10 years ago. Do we know more than we used to know in terms of like which goalies are the actual good ones?
I think directionally, the obvious three or four guys at the top of the list who are competing for the Vezina every year, let's set them aside. Hellebuck, Shesterkin, let's set them aside, right? We have very good, you know, pulse check on those guys are going to be high-end goalies. The one, I think there's two things here. I'll answer your question statistically, but then I'll answer it more theory. I typically, especially over the last decade or so, I look a lot more at goals saved versus expected. I think we know a lot more about how shot difficulty and the shot profile of every goaltender faced. I mean, your environment that you play in, from Florida all the way through Chicago, right, can be so materially different, one goaltender to the next. And yet we comp these guys head-to-head all the time, which doesn't necessarily feel fair. And you could be a high-end goalie in a really, really bad situation and post an .880 stop rate, right? And it's like, well, I think there's been good deviation away from raw save percentage to that end. So we do look at, like, hey, how difficult is this guy's job on a given day behind the defense, behind the structure in front of him? I do think that's been a little bit illuminative from a statistics standpoint, but I think more theory to answer your question. I've really went back to this, and I think it's informed a lot of what front offices you've seen over the last, especially the last 5-6 years. Teams have really turned aggressively towards platoons, and I think that's twofold. Number one, it's net cheaper on the books by and large, and the cost of the downside risk of massively overpaying a goaltender who doesn't pay out doesn't really exist in those scenarios. The second piece is If I don't have a highly predictable outcome in net, I'd rather, but I have more predictable outcomes at forward or on the blue line, I'd rather deploy my cash in a hard cap league at positions where I know I'm going to get value and roll the dice in net. The problem is goaltending is just so important for a team's win-loss trajectory over an 82-game season that you really, it's kind of a cute game, right? You could say, hey, we'll be thin on our cap allocation for in net, and it's like, well, good luck with that strategy, because if you've got underperforming goalies, you're almost certainly going to miss the playoffs. I do think one of the things that I do go back to is year-over-year repeatability. It, to me, for a goaltender, might be the most important nuanced data point that you can find. And I'll invoke a couple names, but like Darcy Kuemper, for example, is a great, great, great example of this, where in any given season, he's never been the best goalie on the ice, but in almost every season for a 6-7-8 year stretch, he's been a top 12 goalie. And you kind of see this another version of that. So he's in LA. You've got Linus Ullmark's another good example of a goalie, Boston now in Ottawa, where you have year-over-year repeatability, where you still have volatility season to season, but you know the results are somewhere going to be between average and good, and that's the sort of like floor you need to put in when it comes to puck stopping and investing around the rest of the team. And that's why the Sabres situation is so alarming. Not a single person, starting with the front office, can look at their goaltending and give you any degree of confidence that this tandem, starting with Lucan, but not solely including him, can drive a top 18, top 20 goaltending performance over an 82-game season. And that to me, is a pretty scary proposition. And that's even true if you're a team as talented and as deep as a Carolina, a Colorado, an Edmonton. I mean, for how many years have we been talking about goaltending in those markets, and those teams are perennial Stanley Cup contenders? And it's like, if it's true there, what does it mean for a team like Buffalo, right?
Given the fact that his name hasn't come up and how you sound overall about their goaltending, I'm going to go ahead and just guess that you don't think maybe the Sabres uncovered a hidden gem in claiming Colton Ellis off waivers yesterday.
Maybe. I think it's an interesting claim. I actually thought that made a lot of sense. When I saw him hit the waiver wire, I actually thought the Sabres would put in a bid for him, and they did. But again, you're talking like, what is the ceiling of a player that you're claiming on waivers? I mean, you just look at a 10-15 year trajectory. It's not that goaltenders are inherently unpredictable, but I beg the question of, over the last decade, go find me goalies who have been on the waiver wire or on the waiver wire more than once that end up being top 15, top 17 puck stoppers over a full season. It's just, you know, they're very hard to come by. I wrote about this, totally unrelated, but you know, I was making the case that, you know, I thought Morgan Frost in Calgary, kind of a, you know, a random six forward, but I thought there was a chance that maybe he has a breakout year this year, and put a lot of different arguments as to why that's the case. But, you know, buried right in the middle of that piece is like, I just want to emphasize, like, betting on the late bloomer, you know, 8 years removed from his first round draft pedigree status is almost always a losing bet. Like, these are not high confidence wagers, but when you're the Sabres, and you really don't have a lot, waiver wire isn't necessarily a bad idea. I mean, there is a difference between the discussion of, does he improve the goaltending substantially? Almost certainly not. But is it relatively better than what they had yesterday? The answer to that may be yes. So I think it's worth the flyer, if nothing else. But I don't think it's the elixir that that cures this here.
Really glad I asked. Tremendous from Travis Yost. I'm on Alex Lyon's hockey reference page. I never noticed this column before, Bulldog. RBS. Like, is that rebounds? No, it's called really bad starts.
Really?
Yes. They have quality starts. We all know that one. But apparently, developed by Rob Volman in the Hockey Abstract, Travis, really bad starts, RBS. And Lyon has an uncomfortable 8 in his 26 starts last year for Detroit. That's a little high, I think. Higher than you'd want.
It's an interesting metric, and it's actually, you know what, when it was actually produced, and it's, you know, it's a pretty, and I say this not as a criticism anyway, it's a bit of an elementary stat, right? You're just measuring how quickly a guy's getting blown off the ice, but I do think it's actually more important in the post-COVID era where teams are platooning a lot more, because one of the benefits of platooning is you don't get into this game of, we've got to play this, you know, average goaltender on 3 and 4 nights or back-to-back. Like, we're just going to rotate these guys. And that is directionally and statistically the right move to make. But if you've got a guy getting chased in 30-ish percent of his starts, the rest component does absolutely nothing for you. So, again, it's not to say that that Alex Lyon can't be a guy, but the limited track record and what he's put on tape and what the numbers say suggest there might be a fairly – there's definitely a low floor. We've already seen that. And then the question is, like, can he be a stopgap? Maybe, but maybe not, or probably not. And, again, we're really – you're at that point, when you're answering in that regard, I think you're splitting hairs in terms of what the goaltending setup actually looks like.
Mm-hmm. So talk to us more about why you're so bullish on this defense. Kesselring is the new piece. He's on IR here to begin. So that's, you know, tough break. The Sabres have been searching for a D partner for Owen Power, I think, since he entered the organization, and it took them, you know, what are we going into here? His third full season now? Just talk about the decor and what you like about them so much. I was Darlene at the front, all right? But.
Yeah, it's so one of the big I would say blue line debates over the years is, you know, what is your blue line look like when you've got the superstar, the Cale Makar, the Adam Fox on your first pair, and they're chewing up a bunch of cap. Well, typically what you see those teams do is they go very, very heavy, you know, very skew heavy usage to their first pair. Maybe their second pair is thinned out a little bit, and they bury their third pair, right? It's usually journeyman guys. I think that you've seen, as teams are more, especially the way the Sabres are set up, right, they do effectively have, and we should not, you know, I do want to emphasize this point. The Sabres are not the worst team in the league or anything close, right? We just watched this team compete aggressively at even strength last year, which is not nothing, right? It's a pretty significant element to have to be able to compete 5-on-5. And part of the reason they did that, it's not like they had this elite first line or this elite first pair. I mean, I think their leading scorer had 72 points last year. It's more so that they could roll three quality forward lines and at least two quality defensive pairs. You get Power back on the ice. You bring in Kesselring. Like, they do go five, if not six deep on the blue line. But more importantly, they can deploy three respectable defensive pairings that I don't want to call them interchangeably, because obviously you're gonna skew a little bit of the minutes incrementally towards Darlene's pairing as a starter, not to mention what Power and Kesselring will do when they're healthy. But there isn't a notable weakness on that blue line where you can look and say, I am going to close my eyes the 15 or 17 minutes they're on the ice. Having really quality depth and no known weaknesses, in my opinion, can be just as meaningful as having that superstar defender at the top of your blue line. That's not one-to-one, but usually when you have that guy, you've got to thin out the rest of the blue line, and you got to get very tight on the way you're deploying capital. I think the Sabres have invested in the position. I think they've done relatively well, and I don't see any weakness. So really, though, the question is, how much can they subsidize defensively if you are bearish about the goaltending? And like I said, that's typically been a losing bet. Good blue lines in front of bad goaltending typically end up in bad defensive results. Maybe the Sabres can turn that around a little bit. And again, if you get a little bit of pop and Luukkonen has a bit of a bounce back year, then maybe that's not such a difficult discussion. But I do like the fact that Buffalo can seemingly deploy three pairings when healthy. And it doesn't really matter what forward group they're playing with. They should be okay at 5-on-5. And to me, I would actually argue that's probably the biggest tailwind they have, that they've got very good defensive structure and very good theoretical pairings entering the season on Thursday.
Travis, last thing, unless we add a little time for a Bills take from you, the division, like you might have alluded to earlier, maybe it's a little softer. It has not been soft, but is that the Barkov injury? Is that age? Is that just Boston, you know, being down? How does it add up?
Well, this is the way I think about the Atlantic, because I've had this conversation in Ottawa radio and Montreal radio, and I think it's also just as much true in Buffalo at WGR. It's, if you look at the landscape, this division has been so top-heavy for so many years, partially because of multiple teams in deep rebuilds, but also partially because the strength at the top of the division has been extraordinary. We're all making bets and wagers on how these teams are going to shake out over the course of the year, but let me just kind of walk you through this here. The Bruins, who have probably one of the best two-decade runs you're going to see from an NHL team in terms of regular season performance, go look at their lineup. You're going to take the Sabres lineup 7 days out of the week over the Bruins, who are entering. They entered pretty close to the trade deadline last year, but that is a very, very David Pastrnak and a lot of other randoms. That is a very sobering lineup that the Bruins are putting on the ice this year. Florida, obviously, two-time defensive Stanley Cup champ, and they're starting at the very top. But, yeah, you're going to have to go ahead and delete their two most meaningful players, their two most impactful players out of the lineup. One, in Alex Barkov through the entire season, and two, Matthew Tkachuk through December. I mean, even if you say, okay, well, Florida's still deep enough and talented enough, they're a no-brainer playoff team. Okay, fine, but are they a 110 regular season point team? That's what we're talking about. These are regular season games that you play in the division that are meaningful to fringe playoff teams like a Montreal, a Buffalo, an Ottawa, and so on. And by the way, Toronto. I mean, Toronto just lost their second best player unequivocally to Vegas for nothing, and didn't really replace him. They've got Scott Laughton, who's going to be out for it sounds like multiple weeks. So and by the way, Tampa Bay's core is materially older than they were, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. It's a lot of the same guys, and they're still very dynamic. But that is one of the oldest rosters you're going to find in the entire league in Tampa Bay. So between Tampa Bay, Boston, Toronto, and Florida, those four teams, if I said to you two, you want to bet that three of those four teams take a step backwards just in terms of total points accumulated, I think you two and everyone else would say, yeah, I'll take that bet, three out of four. Well, that's points that are on the table for an Ottawa, a Montreal, a Buffalo to step into. And so when I say, like, the blue line in Buffalo might be the thing they have most going for them right now, the second thing most going for them right now is they are not playing in a super strong division. And again, there's always a surprise team or two, and maybe it bears out in the Atlantic, but I just think that this division went from relatively strong, if not one of the strongest, to the third best division of the four in the conference. And, you know, for a team that, and I'll say this not critically, but not as a compliment either, for a team that seems strikingly average, assuming they get some just adequate goaltending in Buffalo, now then you do start talking, okay, how do we steal four games over the course of this 82-game season and just cross that playoff threshold? That actually becomes a real conversation. And to me, I think it is a very real thing that this division is much weaker than it was even 2, 3 years ago.
If you don't have time for it or don't want it, just hang up. We'll be fine. But if you do, one of our questions today, right now, would you take, you know, speaking of bets, you could say yes or no to, would you take the AFC Championship game being Bills at Colts?
Oh, I'm going to bet against that. I'll bet against that. Although I will say,
you wouldn't take it. As a Bills fan, you wouldn't take it. Or would you take?
I wouldn't take it, because that means two things. You're telling me the Bills are on the road, so they're the two, at least, and no better than the two seed. Is that the proposition?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I said no as well, because I want the one. I want the week off.
You got to have the one. And I will say, though, to the extent that we're still trying to figure out which of these teams are real or not, and there's a ton of them in the AFC. Whew, boy, the Colts look real. I mean, even if you think Daniel Jones is a regression candidate to some degree, the rest of the team looks darn good. And I'm going to leave you with one other placeholder question, since you jogged my thoughts at the very top here with 17-year Bills playoff drought, this endless rebuild for the Sabres, us talking 10 years ago.
Yep.
Here's something that I've been just wrestling with that I hope it's a good launch point for a discussion for you guys tomorrow. Think about this. How much discussion around the Bills this year and in years past has been, well, you know, we're bad against the run because we play that way stylistically, but then also in the back of your mind, you're thinking, yeah, but this defense and this secondary is going to get absolutely lit up when they play a good quarterback. Like, I especially now this year, I have been having immense trouble reconciling the, well, they're terrible against the run in part because they play that way stylistically. Okay, but also, what is every single person in the 716 dramatically fear? It's the moment we play a decent quarterback, he is going to throw all day long on our weak secondary. And that's, to me, a way of saying our run defense isn't very good, either by design or by talent or by some combination, but also we don't trust the pass defense when it matters. That, to me, is the reason I think you're going to see a Bills cornerback trade before the deadline. I would bet my... I don't want to say whole body. I'd bet my right leg. I'd amputate my right leg if I trade for a corner by the trade deadline. I think it's that dire.
It's Bulldog's big idea. Trade in the secondary.
He's the right man. Well, Bulldog's the genius. We know this.
We do. We will discuss it. Travis, here comes the season. Have a great time with it.
All right. Enjoy, guys. Take care.
Thank you. Travis Yost of TSN. Chicago and Florida, the first game in the NHL season underway. No score in the first period. We have yet to see the league's first goal Do you have a bet on it?
But no, I don't. Bedard hit the crossbar on a wrister from just inside the blue line.
Can you get first crossbar? Anytime crossbar, could you get that? It's pretty sophisticated now. We're late for a break. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog at 803-0550. Take Travis's question, take ours. Do what you think is right. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, power play, I think in the last 50 games was around 22%. I think we've come out of camp with the power play around 24%. The guy that it really intrigues me that we didn't have last year that can help us in both categories is Norris. You know, Norris, good power play guy, and we feel that he can be a top penalty killer for us. Just with, he's got length, he can skate, he's good on draws. You win a face-off penalty killing, you're probably killed off 20-plus seconds. So it's a guy that I think can help us in both categories that we didn't have last year.
Lindy Ruff, WGR this morning. Sabres embarking on another new season. Opening night is Thursday. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Norris is the simple question. I don't think it's just this. Health. Obviously, that's been a... I shouldn't say obviously. Not everybody knows this, but that's been a problem with Norris.
Big time. Yep.
It's probably why he was even available.
It's the number one reason, undoubtedly, Ottawa going to the playoffs, planning to go to the playoffs. We can't count on this game. Turns out he was hurt when they traded him, so they might have felt like it was a ticking time bomb in their lineup. Let's go get Dylan Cousins. He's going to score, you know, 40% fewer points than Josh Norris, but at least he'll be in the lineup. We can count on him, you know. So,
how much is there with this player if he is healthy?
I think he's got point per game written all over him. I think he's 35 goals if he plays 75 games.
And that is his career high. He did it.
Yeah.
So
and I don't even think it wasn't in 82 games.
Like, nope, 66.
Right. I think he's an excellent player, and he's an excellent 200-foot player. I love this trade at inception if he can stay on the ice. I think they got the better player. I don't even think it's close. That's why they had to give up extra stuff. It wasn't, you know, everybody was freaking out when they didn't qualify Bernard Docker this summer because like, they gave up a second-round pick for him. Like, the trade was completely linear, right? It's Cousins for Norris, a second-round pick for this defenseman. No, the second-round pick was for Norris. Like, you had to pay extra to get the better player in the deal. The question is, can he stay healthy? That's not to say they shouldn't have qualified the guy that they traded for a few months earlier, but all the same, it was not a second-round pick. It, you know, was a part of the transaction. Anyway, so much rides on him offensively. Like, if he stays on the ice, there are your goals that you gave up in the Paterka trade. But the question is, can you really, you know, count on that? He's had a very hard time staying on the ice. He's had the same shoulder operated on more than once. It's just, you worry that it's just one, you know, one hit and it's going to be over for him.
Josh Norris, age 26, 21-22 season is when he scored 35 goals for Ottawa. And in that season, he finished just out of the medals for the Lady Bing. He finished 57th. How do you finish 57th for an award? What does this ballot look
because
like?
Because 57 players got votes and he was one of them.
Even it was more.
Wow.
71 players got a vote or more for the Lady Bing in 2022. I mean, that's in my bio if I were this guy. you know,
finished 57th in
center, yep. Buffalo Sabres, University of Michigan, once finished 57th for the Lady Bing. As I told you, my grandfather died on Sunday. He was 94. I tweeted a picture of us last night and said a couple of things about him. His brother was a major league pitcher. I've always found that really cool. My great uncle, who I never knew, Cliff Fannin, pitched 8 years in the major leagues. He pitched in the minors for Toronto. Might have thrown a no-hitter for Toronto. Pitched for the San Diego Padres, who were then a minor league team. And died in 1966, which I think is incredible. My grandfather lived such a long life. His brother died 59 years ago. And he died Sunday. And I just was thinking about Cliff and his career, as I often do. And in 1948, he got like 2 MVP votes.
Okay, yeah.
Which might have put him around 57th. I don't know.
Like, right.
You can vote for anybody, right?
Right.
But I, if I remember right, he finished ahead of Phil Rizzuto, which I kind of thought was cool.
All right.
Finished 32nd. In 1948 for the American League MVP.
Well, we've got two sports cards watching over us here in this studio. One is your Uncle Cliff, and the other one is Joe DeLamalier.
Yes.
Those are perched up
two of the greats.
Near the clock there
in
the room.
One's in his Sports Hall of Fame. The other got 2 votes for the 1948 AL MVP right. And was my late grandfather's brother. Let's go to Matt here. Hi, Matt.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Sorry to hear about your grandfather.
Thanks.
I got a thought, and I know this might sound ridiculous on its face, but at least hear me out. Do you think Allen might have a Diggs problem? Not in the sense that, you know, he wants him back on the team, but that it seems every time he plays a team that has Diggs on it, now twice, the offense looks terrible. Like, not even just terrible, it looks like Allen is completely, like, mentally discombobulated to the point where I watched the All-22 from the New England game, and I got to say, it was honestly stunning to see Allen. One, he had happy feet the entire game. He's leaving clean pockets. He's bailing on clean pockets where nobody's near him, whereas if he would have stayed for another second or two, he had people coming wide open. He's missing easy throws and not taking throws that he's been taking for a year and a half now consistently, where they're giving him short throws to wide open receiver and he's waiting and waiting for something else, like he's trying to show off or something to dig and prove something.
I mean, you know this is a leap, right? You said it up front. You knew it when you said it up front.
I know it's a leap, but I mean, it's twice in a row now. And it's not even that the offense is not just playing good. It's like they're completely discombobulated.
Well, I mean,
Allen is a big reason why.
Maybe you're right. I'd have no idea if it's true. And I just couldn't sit here and honestly say that I think that that's a real thing. That Diggs is the problem. Diggs is the reason. I couldn't say it.
I can't even really get my head around the idea that a player who has accomplished what this player has accomplished in the league and the venues that he's had success in and all of the big spots that he's come through in. And I know there are spots where it hasn't happened for him, would be the least bit worried about Stefon Diggs standing on the other sideline. I just can't. I don't know that you're wrong either, but it sounds ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to
consider it.
I wouldn't want to say it out loud. Just my either. I wouldn't want to say it out loud.
This is one of those ones that you say this sometimes. You want to try that out on your friends.
Ask someone else first.
Yeah, try
but
it
you
out,
never know what they're saying.
Try it out at the bar and then see if you want to call us with it. I don't know. I don't know. But it would be really weird to me if that were a thing.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year, Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That would cause him. I think it's more, you know, not trusting guys that are open and the defense, and you know, that's it.
Be great if you knew it was true. It'd be great for Diggs.
Yes,
because he would have a job forever.
Right.
He would, anytime you're playing the Bills in a season, you would just go get Diggs.
Right.
All right, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. We'll be right back. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.